Greetings, and welcome to Research on Religion, a weekly podcast series devoted to the social scientific study of religion. I'm Anthony Gill, your host, professor of political science at the University of Washington, and distinguished senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, the gracious sponsor of our podcast. We encourage you to visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org to post comments, ask questions, access additional material related to today's program, and to find out what is happening at the Institute. All right, let's begin. Over the past year, we featured four podcast interviews with the folks at a small town rural Washington congregation known as Redemption Church, which just so happens to be the church that I attend, though not as much as I should be, as I likely will be reminded shortly. Our interviews have featured two discussions with Matt Boswell, the main dude who does all the Sunday preaching. We can't call him the lead pastor because he says that Jesus is the lead pastor and he's just filling in temporarily. So we'll just call him the main dude who does all the Sunday preaching. Now, we've also featured a discussion about youth ministry with Scott Thompson and chatted with the congregation's musical pastor, Ryan Habig, a podcast that featured a great rendition of one of Ryan's original songs played exclusively for listeners of this show. I will link to that podcast, so you are not going to want to miss that. The primary reason why I have focused a great deal of attention on this particular congregation is because I want to know the nuts and bolts of how a church operates. Any of us who are regular churchgoers get to see what goes on during the Sunday morning service, but we may have little knowledge on the behind-the-scenes management that your typical church undergoes. Personally, I find the organizational details fascinating, and it gives me a greater appreciation for religious life in America. Second, despite the fact that I want to focus on a typical congregation, Redemption Church is in some ways not quite typical. We told the story of Redemption Church's creation back on October 10th of last year, and the most interesting thing about that story was that Pastor Matt and a handful of other exiles were able to create a church within 1 week. The time they left their old denomination from the time they gathered the congregation in a completely different location was 7 days. And considering the need to find a location, to obtain insurance, to get some official standing with the government so that one could get insurance, to publicize where everyone would need to meet, to even come up with a name, and then also make sure somebody purchased the sacramental grape juice, well, that was a pretty action-packed week, I can tell you that. The story is worth a listen to if you haven't heard it already, and we will, again, link to it on our website, so I urge you to go back and check that out. Now, after that wild and crazy week, we waited a few more months to talk again with Pastor Matt about where the church was at. We talked about the next phase of building the church, including the writing of bylaws and the need to find a more permanent space. Yes, Jesus had a wandering ministry 2,000 years ago, but today people like to know that their church has administrative offices and youth group space above hardware stores, which just so happens where Redemption Church's administrative offices and youth group space is located. Okay, so now it's been about a year since the congregation has arisen from the Schumpeterian chaos that is the American religious landscape, and I thought it'd be worthwhile to check in once again and see how things are going. I was also prompted by a Facebook message from Pastor Matt asking where I've been recently, and since I haven't been around the past 2 months, I figured some FaceTime with our main spiritual advisor would be a good idea. So here I am today with Matt Boswell, pastor of Redemption Church, who has lived in Arizona, Spokane, Canada, and now Duval, Washington, which I believe represents the four corners of the earth. Matt, welcome to Research on Religion.
Well, it is cool to be with you, and actually, it is cool to see you after two months.
It's been about 2 months. Yeah, so you got.
I don't know. You've been traveling the West, I'm sure. I mean, you got that cowboy hat all the time, so I'm thinking you're all over that.
I'm a wandering guy, just like, you know, the rodeos, the itinerant guys that go around there. You know, I've been very busy this summer because I've been very active in scouts, and we've been camping in Idaho and canoeing in Montana, and then there's another outing this week and that week, and it's been pretty hectic over the course of the summer. And I think, you know, we kind of represent the typical family in that regard. So I just want to reassure you that we're heading back to church. My wife just recently broke her leg again, though, so that's going to be a challenge. But we're going to be getting back there. But this actually, that story, it actually brings up an interesting issue
that I want to raise with your church. And it just doesn't involve me, but any pastoral staff at any church really has to deal with this issue of how to maintain adherence and enthusiasm of your flock week after week and month after month. Now, you've been at this for about a year. Our church started out with a huge bang in its initial week about a year ago, packing a high school auditorium to standing room only with over 600 folks. What was it, 650 or so?
Something
folks?
Like that, something yeah. like that.
It was a lot of people that were there. And you could feel the vibe there. There was this really kind of big rally around the congregation feeling that was there. But any organizational leadership will know this. Sustaining such enthusiasm can be really difficult. So how has it been going in terms of maintaining that initial momentum, the enthusiasm and adherence to getting folks in those pews or auditorium seats every Sunday?
Well, you know, I think it's a couple of different things. I think one part of it is obviously when you have kind of a dramatic kickoff like we experienced a year ago, you know, it's kind of like the grand opening Sunday, right? So everybody comes, some people come from other churches even just to see, hey, what are you doing? What's going on? You know, what's all the, you know, the noise about that we've heard in town? So we certainly saw with that first Sunday. As time goes on, what happens is probably like in any church, you settle into the regular rhythmic patterns that are true to churches. And in the Northwest particularly, there is a dynamic that when I talk to other pastor friends in other parts of the country, it's just different. And the different thing is here, if you see somebody two Sundays out of four Sundays per month, they're considered a faithful, high-yield attender.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where, like, you know, I talk to my buddies in Arizona or down in the South or other places, and it's like, it's four for four, man. I mean, people just don't have kind of the in and out nature like they do in the Northwest. And when I talk to other guys in the Northwest, they see the exact same pattern, right?
Yeah. What do you think explains that? Because I have a few ideas, but let me hear what you have there.
Yeah, you know, I think at best we are always speculating, mm-hmm. right? So that's about all I can offer up. I think a couple of things. One is the spirit of the Northwest is a uniquely independent spirit. It really is. And I think that plays in sort of at an unconscious level. I think also when it's not raining on us, we feel like we are allowed to be rewarded by missing, you know, a Sunday, that kind of thing. I think also a lot of extracurricular activities are very intrusive to the Sunday morning time slot, whether it be basketball, soccer, you know, if you're involved in music or dance or whatever else. It just seems that Sunday gets really leveraged mm-hmm. In the Northwest for those kinds of events. And so all of those things kind of coupled together to probably drive some of that, as well as, I think, redemption, because we end up having a lot of white-collar mm-hmm. Individuals as well. Business travel, away from the family all week. So when they have a weekend where dad's home, sometimes they come, sometimes they don't.
Right.
Those are all kind of factors that play into it. And it's interesting because for the people that maybe are there two Sundays out of four, when you talk to them, they're like, oh man, we love redemption. We're so committed. We're in. So we don't see that and go, oh, that's half-heartedness. We kind of just go, it's the nature of life in the Northwest.
Yeah. No, that definitely is a challenge. And I think our church, if you look over the pews or the auditorium seats on any given Sunday, you do tend to see you know, a mix of the old farm community, but you also have a lot of white collar individuals, a lot of people mid-career too.
Right.
So we have a congregation that I think by many standards would be considered relatively young. And so you got, you know, teenagers that got to go to this baseball tournament down in Yakima and traveling. Even if you're just traveling Friday, Saturday, man, you come back the next day and you're wiped out and it's just hard to get up in the
yeah.
morning.
Even
though services are at 10 o'clock, they kind of start at about 10:10,
right.
you know.
That's another part of the spirit.
It's the spirit. There is that kind of a vibe that is going on there. I mean, in terms of that, and so I appreciate that, and I'm glad that I'm not the only one that, you know, makes it occasionally, and I am definitely trying to get back and get into the swing of things as school gets a little bit more regular tempo to it. Is the church attracting more people? Is it growing? Is it where we were about 9-10 months ago when things started settling? Where are we at?
You know, it's funny. I think last time we talked about this, and I said, you know, David counted one time, people died, so I don't count. And that's a little bit for my own sanity. But what I can say positively is it's kind of a weird thing. Like, summertime, even in the Northwest, is funny because a lot of people scatter.
Right.
But at the same time, you also start picking up a lot of new people. And so one of the habits that I have started here in the last 6 or 7 weeks is just standing at the front doors. I'm going old school Baptist, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, greeting them as they leave or whatever. And literally every week I'm meeting like 3 to 5 new families that I do not know, had not met, are new to us. I mean, even last Sunday I met a couple of families who just moved to Duval in the last month.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, we love Redemption. We want to make this our home and everything else. So what we know is we're picking up families. What we don't know is really where our final numbers land,
right.
In part because other people are traveling for the summer or that rotational 2 weeks in, 2 weeks out.
Yeah.
It's like if we had everybody who says Redemption's their home in the building, we don't have enough seats. You know, I mean,
right.
it's that dynamic. But because it's always so rotational, in any given time, you know, you've got this bulk of populace that is out and about, right,
mm-hmm.
and not kind of a part of the Sunday morning thing. So we're growing. How much we've grown, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's been a great and probably one of the more enthusiastic times when I'm looking at it here just in the last couple of months, the amount of new families that I've met that are saying they want to make Redemption the church that they're a part of and that kind of thing. So I've been really, really encouraged because I think, you know, you kind of have, the like we said, the big, you know, hoopla, and then you kind of settle into how do we do this, and we were very
right.
head down for a lot of months as a staff,
right.
just trying to keep working out the machine. Now we're able to step back a little bit and enjoy what we've been doing for, you know, 9+ months. We're finally transitioning into, oh, okay, now we can breathe, we can start
yeah.
to look around, we can dream a little bit more,
okay.
because we're stabilizing.
Yeah, so when did that stabilization take place? Did it take place after 3-4 months? Are you just starting to feel it now after the first year or so?
I think everybody's going to feel a little different. I know for me, I've only felt it here by about July.
Okay.
Which it sounds a little strange.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we were learning to do so many things, or we were trying to adjust so many issues that, you know, in some ways, like I said, it was just, I'm watching the puck, I'm not watching the goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just head down looking at the ice and the puck, and that's it.
Right.
And so really when we got to summer, the pace of ministry in my particular corner of the church slowed down.
Yeah.
So once it did, I was able to kind of go, oh, I can look around a little bit, which even, you know, I know we're going to get into it probably in a little bit as far as like this church tour that we did and
right.
everything else. And some of that is really good because you can go other places. You can look around and go, oh, wow, what we're doing is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see how it's going in other places and you see the blessing, you know, when you're able to measure it against something else and go, oh, okay, well, that looks pretty rough. We've got it good,
yeah.
you know. So there was a lot of that finally happened in July.
And it's interesting to note that because, again, our first interview with you was literally 2 days after the first service. So you'd, you know, been at it for a crazy 7 days trying to set up this church, just find anything. It was almost a, you know, 24/7 job for that first week and just a lot of stress and you know, a lot of pressure to get that set up. And you barely had any sleep when I was talking to you that day.
Yeah.
You know, then it was a couple of months later and, it, you know, you're just getting into, okay, we did the basics. We landed somewhere. Now we need to set up camp a little bit more and clean up things with bylaws. And make sure that we got the T's crossed and the I's dotted. And now you're starting to get more routine. So this is a nice
right.
third possible interview. Before we start talking a little bit more about that, I want to take it back to those new folks that are joining. And, you know, as you mentioned, you're standing up front now. You're greeting people just like the old-time Baptist. I don't take it you're wearing the white robes.
No, I'm jeans and an untucked shirt.
Right.
You know, but I do wear slip-on shoes. That's
okay.
something, you know. And that's high class. They're shiny and everything. So, you know.
Okay, so you're out there greeting folks. You're meeting new people. Do you have any sense of what's bringing people in? I mean, you mentioned one family. Well, they're from out of town. So they're just, you know, looking for something. And there's a couple churches in town. We're one of the bigger ones. And so that's one thing. But are there other things that you've noticed what are bringing people in?
Yeah, one of the big shifts we made, this is where it goes back to, there was a lot of behind-the-scenes extra work we were doing, is we took, and we might have even talked about this when we had our last get together, just because we were starting to adjust how we handle staff and pastors, how we deploy them. You know, traditionally, you kind of have, you know, your youth pastor and your associate pastor and your missions pastor and all these things. And we said, man, we want to go not with having pastors that are running ministries. We want to have a pastor over areas of emphasis. And they might have many ministries under them. And they wouldn't even be traditional to some of the headings that maybe people know of kind of, you know, in church dynamics or history or whatever. And so one of the things we did is we took Scott Thompson, who was overseeing student ministries, mm-hmm. and we removed him and we made him pastor over all things pertaining to outreach or mission in our city. So at that point, then a number of ministries fell under that, but his job was to really drive us and even ride us as a leadership and as a church to be more missionally minded. How are we going to be in the city? How are we going to bless the city? How are we going to reach out to the city? And how are we going to do it in uncomfortable ways? I mean, we didn't want to just kind of, hey, you come to us, because in part, there's nothing for you to come to us to, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, we're at the school on Sunday and we have this little place in the midweek. And so, again, it goes back to dumping the church out into the city as much as possible. And so, by shifting that, you know, Scott's putting us out there a lot more, putting a lot of different events or venues into place for people of Redemption Church to be engaged in the city. So that's another thing where we've met people in town doing different events. And so, like, one couple I met last Sunday, they started coming because they went to our Bible camp for mm-hmm. kids, right? Mm-hmm. So they heard about it in town, showed up, kid went to it for 4 days, and they're like, let's go check out that church.
Yeah.
And so from that, we picked up that family. So it's stuff like that that yeah. we do that also brings them in, as well as the fact we just have a super strong web presence. So, I mean, we leverage video and audio and creativity, and we really, really push that hard. And so people can kind of shop us at that level, really get a sense of us, and then from that they go, okay, we'll check it out live finally.
Yeah, you do have that web presence, and I'll make sure that we link to the website, because there's a lot of fun things that are up there, including one of my favorite ones where Scott is dressed as a football referee and says, you make the call, and you know how to deal with daily life circumstances as a Christian. So that's a really good presence. You also mentioned the Vacation Bible School, and you know, a lot of churches have their Vacation Bible School right there on their premises, but again, and we're going to talk a little bit about space in a minute here, but you know, we meet in an auditorium on Sundays, but the rest of the day that's a public high school.
Right.
And so you got to find somewhere else to put your Vacation Bible School, and the space that you have for administrative offices are just not suited for that. So you put it down basically in a farm in the valley.
Yeah.
And it's one of the main roads. I mean, there aren't many main roads in Duval, but it's one of the main roads that come in. You saw the big tent out there, and there was a big, huge sign that says Vacation Bible School. So that must have been a big, huge presence. How many kids did we get coming to that?
I think the total on that was around 120 kids that they had for that particular one. And, you know, this was kind of like one of the things we didn't know going into this year was, I think I've used this phrase, we didn't know what we didn't know. And so with every event, it was both doing the event and a learning opportunity.
Right.
But it also has this third tier to it, which is, and other people aren't so certain about it either just yet. So, you know, it's like, okay, this is the proving year. And, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the Vacation Bible School, we called it Bible Camp, was one of those proving years where people are like, okay, let's see how this is going to go. You're out in tents, in the field, in August, you know, and it was a hot week,
very
right?
Hot
so
week, yeah.
It's hot. How are the kids going to do? You know, all of that. Sometimes I think people in the Northwest are a little too protective of their kids. Like, they wrap them a bubble pack, you know. So it's like, you know, I don't know if I want my kid in the outdoors in the sun, you know.
Because there were sheep about 50 yards away.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, this is true farm stuff, man. And yet it was great because by like day two or day three, people were going, oh, this is cool. Oh, this is safe. This is, the kids are loving it. And so then people started kind of at the last minute inviting friends more. So we look at this next year and we go, man, this was a hit. This was almost one of the best ones we ever pulled off when we really analyzed it. And all of the people that volunteered, we had like 85 volunteers to run it.
Wow.
It was almost one leader per kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, even the payoff of bonus there was so many people wanted to contribute to this and be a part of it. And they all said the same thing, especially the ones that had done this in years past. They're like, wow, that was the best one we've ever pulled off. So I think we proved we can do it. We've proven that, you know what, you don't need the traditional confines to do it, and we can have a great time while it's all going underway.
And I think that's a measure of the enthusiasm, too. I mean, we're trying to count the number of seats filled up on Sunday morning service, but you're talking 85 volunteers for Vacation Bible School. I mean, that's a lot of passion.
Right,
you know, packed
right.
in there for somebody to give up a week of their, you know, vacation or, you know, other times they could be doing something else. That's huge commitment.
And so yeah, no, really it was. Well. And I'm glad you mentioned that because we, you know, a lot of people would think, oh, okay, so the stay-at-home moms ran Bible camp this summer. No, we had guys literally taking a week off of work.
Yeah.
You know, to be a part of this. And so, I mean, and it wasn't even like because you're teaching kids. I know one guy, he took a week off of work so he could help park the cars.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He was just, I don't care. I just want to help.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? And so it was awesome that there wasn't some kind of ego thing in it. Like, well, do I, you know, I get that job? It was
yeah.
like, there's like, I just want to do whatever I'm needed to do.
Yeah.
So it was really pretty cool to see that.
Okay. I think I could do that, park cars. Because, you know, working with 7 to 8 year olds, man, that's hard for
that's
me.
That's rougher.
But, yeah,
they scare me, man. That's why I work with adults, man. Kids
exactly.
scare me.
Exactly. Scott Thompson is a
I love them, but they scare me.
So what else do you do? I mean, it's the churches. There's the Sunday thing. There's Vacation Bible School. You mentioned some other outreach where you're connecting with people in the community within the city. What other things are you doing here, and have you changed your mind on a few things? Have you said, oh, that's really working, let's invest more in that, or this one's not working so much, let's move on?
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to the outreach of the city, we have a two-pronged approach. And then, you know, one is what we do as the organization, which is Redemption Church. The other is what we encourage of the people to go and do as the ecclesiastical body, which is the actual church, right? It's people.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of like what Scott Thompson's job is to organize the event side of it, but also to really instruct, encourage, and equip people and remind people to go and be about doing mission, that everybody is a missional theologian at Redemption Church. They all have the job to take the gospel, and they all have the job to worship God, right? So we see that as really, really central to what we do. So part of it is like the video you mentioned
mm-hmm.
That Scott did. You know, we do these different little missional minute videos that are funny and clever, but really designed to give practical tools on how you can reach out to a neighbor or capitalize on a situation or whatever else. The other thing is really that event side, whether it be Church in the Park that we did this summer, which was great, just to say, hey, we're here, we're open, you know, we're casual about, you know, doing church out here, but we're serious about Jesus, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. We still have Theology on Tap, which is very much shifted to wanting to be more outreach oriented.
Yep.
So we do that.
Yeah, one of my favorites, by the way.
That's right.
That's the one that draws me in.
That's right.
Involved. Okay.
And so Theology on Tap is great. Both our high school and junior high ministry on Wednesday night and Sunday night is increasingly moving toward being dominated by kind of an outreach model on those nights. And then kind of the development and shepherding, discipling kind of stuff will happen in other creative venues. So that's another thing that we do to really be out in the community. And then the other part is just continuing to dump even us as a staff out into the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't just huddle up in our offices all day, every day, you know, 5 days a week or whatever. We try to make a concerted effort to get out into town and work out in the city
mm-hmm.
in very overt ways. So Ryan and Scott, their favorite hangout is actually Starbucks. My favorite hangout is the Tap Room.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, try to get down there at least once a week for a couple of hours. You know, I throw my Bible on the bar, open up my laptop, start working on my PowerPoint for Sunday morning, and inevitably, you know, there's going to be a person that leans over and like,
hey, what you doing here? What's that Bible doing on the bar here?
Yeah, but they're hilarious, man,
yeah.
because they love to talk. They love to interact. They're
yeah.
never offended by it. They look at you a little weird, like, you know, which of these things is not like the other? You know, I'm sitting there with a beer and a Bible, and they're not sure what to make of that. You know, like, which trumps which, that kind of thing. And yet, it's awesome, too, how I think because it's such a disruption of what they assume especially when they ask me, well, what kind of Christian are you? And I'm like, I'm a conservative evangelical. Mm-hmm. You know, even more that disrupts them, because then they're like, oh, well, wait, you guys are X.
Yeah, you aren't supposed to be drinking, because that'll lead to dancing.
That's right. So, yeah, so it's really a lot of fun that way, and it opens up great conversations. And they always want to go and have, they jump to the spiritual conversation. They have questions that they start bringing up. So
yeah, it is a cool place, because one of my favorite pastimes when I get approval from my wife is just to go out and hang out at dive bars around the area and just, you know, eventually just end up talking to people. I usually don't talk spiritual stuff. I usually football or something else like that, or politics, but it's definitely an interesting place, and it's a very interesting model for a church to do that. And so that's rolling successfully, huh? All this stuff.
I mean, I think some things always need refinement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think right now we're really looking at anything saying, hey, we need to refine it. But if there's anything we know about doing mission in any culture, is that culture moves quick. And so we're always asking that question, does this work? Does that work? I mean, another thing, for example, that was a first-time event was we had a men's shootout.
Yeah.
Right. And so, which you missed it.
I missed
it
because I was
all
at
of the things,
Pendleton Roundup, I think.
Yeah, I know, of all of the things. And it was great because when we set it up, we thought maybe 20 guys are going to do this.
Yeah.
We had 50 guys show up to the shootout. Mm-hmm. And this was 3.5 hours away, so it wasn't convenient. It was just one overnight deal. So it's like you get there Friday late, and the shootout's done by 3:30 on Saturday. I mean, so all the way around, we're like, man, we got the odds stacked against us. It's just far enough away. It's just short enough in time. Guys aren't going to maybe really buy into it. And of the 50 guys that came, the breakdown was pretty even between a third of guys that are really committed to redemption, a third of guys that we would call fringe, right? Mm-hmm. They show up maybe some Sundays. They don't have any real connections necessarily, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And another third was just flat out, we don't know Jesus. We just heard you got guns, and that sounds cool.
Yeah.
And then it was great because we're not ashamed of Jesus there. So we have a little message we give, you know, that was very tailored to the event. And then it's just getting to know guys. Yeah. And yet it was amazing. From that event, the following Sunday, a bunch of those guys that weren't even church guys were in church on Sunday from that event. So that's just another one where we went, hey, that was a success. Other things, you know, they're going to tire out in time. We'll ditch them. We'll change them. We'll reinvent them. You know, we don't want to become just stuck in ruts. So we always evaluate. Right now, there's nothing we're looking to can, but that doesn't mean there won't come a time where we go, that's run its course, be done, move on to the next thing.
And that is a really interesting outreach model that, you know, a church that has a very stationary location has been around for a long time. They almost gets into the mindset that you have to come to us rather than going out to you. And, you know, the fact that you get these guys, you know, oh, you got, you know, cheap shooting at this range down in Yakima for a weekend. Wow, that's great. I'm going to do that. But then all of a sudden, you know, they probably have their stereotypes of what Christians are. And, you know, they can't shoot straight, or they're going to be shaken when they pull the trigger.
Right.
But no, they're actually pretty good shots, you know. They hang around with these people. So and that, again, it opens that kind of door to getting people. I think that's pretty cool. Speaking of doors and places, though, I one thing I should mention here, because people probably hear some of the background noise here, is that we're doing this interview at Match Coffee and Wine Bar off of Main Street in Duval. And this is the, I mean, it's no coincidence that we're doing this, because this was the first time that I did the interview with you was here at Match Cafe, because you guys didn't have anywhere else to meet. I mean, you were basically out on the streets, and you had the public high school, but, you know, you had that Sunday morning, and that was the only place that you can go. And so things, you know, again, I like the fact that you're out on the streets and Match Coffee House, you hang out at the tap room, and other people are at other places around the town. So, hey, folks, we're at Match Coffee House. Big shout out for Duval here.
Apparently not.
Yay, Match Coffee. There we go. Okay, somebody says. Anyways, so we just want to give them a big thanks for actually supporting this. But it brings up the issue of place, because during our second interview, we found out that you had identified a place to have your administrative offices, because place is important. It's cool to be out in the community, but then, you know, well, where is Matt now this hour?
Right.
You know, is
he
down there or there? But to have a central location, which you guys call the hub, which kind of gives you the central location, it kind of creates a different vibe to it. I mean, people know where you're going to be. So, have you found out over the past year that a lot more things are starting to gravitate toward the hub now? Is it still a struggle to try to stay out in the community like you did in those first couple months? And are things starting to center themselves around the hub, this administrative office above the hardware store in town?
Right. You know, it's kind of a yes, no. And I think I'll say, yes, we found ourselves gravitating to the hub more over the course of time, but no, not because we want to. You know, it had a lot more to do with, you know, there was so much kind of fine-tuning behind the scenes that having the staff kind of all together and having, you know, the capacity to, you know, print stuff off and do a lot of things we needed to do, mm-hmm. kind of just drove us to being in the location at the hub more than we would have chosen.
Yeah.
Now that we're kind of shifting gears again, I think we're all starting to dump out into the city again more than than we have. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's what we want to do. I mean, that's the thing. And it was just kind of the tyranny of the urgent and the tyranny of the fine-tuning that we had to do that just caused us to say, hey, we have to kind of settle in together for this season. Because the reality is it's pretty tough to have us as a crew all together in the same place out in the city for a whole slew of reasons. I mean, mm-hmm. even as soon as it's a group of us together, if all the pastors are together hanging out for 4 hours at, you know, Match, mm-hmm. well, then anybody that comes in from Redemption feels like, hey, that it must be a hangout. Let's just go hang out with you.
Yeah.
And so the clustering kind of deteriorates the whole intent, which is more wanting to rub shoulders with people that aren't of Redemption. Now, that isn't to say that we don't love it when people from Redemption see us in town, and we love that.
Right, right.
But we try to be kind of strategic, too, about why we're out in the city, mm-hmm. That we want to start up conversations or relationships with people that are not necessarily connected to Redemption. And so we try to be real sensitive about that. Mm-hmm. So I think we're getting better at it. I think for guys like Scott and myself, it's easier for us to be out in town than it is for Ryan Habig.
Yeah, because he's got all his musical instruments.
Yeah, exactly. And he does a lot of tech stuff for us, too, right? So he does all the website development, the video work, and editing, and, you know, all these things that he has to do are a little bit more demanding. He's ratcheted to the hub because of just some of the technology we use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be an interesting tension that you have to balance there, because, you know, after a while, it does kind of nice to go to your office, right? It becomes a sanctuary.
Right, but we made sure to make uncomfortable offices.
Yeah. Oh, I noticed the other day, because I was going to stop in and ask you about this interview, is you cleaned your office.
I did. This goes back to how things have been going for a long time.
Okay.
It had been so kind of exhausting, and there was so much grind going on. Yeah. Man, I had files everywhere, papers all over the place. My desk just looked like somebody just dropped the bomb and walked away. Like a month ago, when things started to kind of loosen up or whatever, I'm like, this is a sty, man. My mother would be ashamed, and my mother is never ashamed of me. But so I'm like, all right, we're going to put this thing in order finally.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me ask. Okay, so that's the administrative office. It's nice to have some place for Ryan to do the work, to, you know, to store the books, and, you know, for people to know that they can go to a place that they can recognize.
Right, and I was going to say something about that, too, mm-hmm. especially because of us being kind of this church without walls.
Yeah.
We don't see a lot of people come down to the hub just to say hi or whatever. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not that common, maybe a couple of times a week. But I think there is a real comfort that comes with that dynamic. It's a little bit like, we know you guys are there, or we know it's there. And that brings us some sense of unconscious peace, because we are so kind of, you know, scattered throughout mm-hmm. this general area, as, you know, hundreds of people that are a part of the church. And so to have that identity is just, it's nice. It's comforting to know it's there, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people look to their spiritual advisors, their pastors, for a place. You know, if I need counseling, that's where I'm going to go to. It'd be nice to know where they are at any given point in time. Even if you're not there all the time, you go there and say, okay, hey, where's Matt? Where's Ryan? Where's Scott? You know, where can we find some folks? So I think there's some comfort to that. How about the high school auditorium? How is that working out? Because I think, you know, moving from a more churchy kind of building that we were in before, and it was more kind of a modern thing. It wasn't the stained glass window kind of thing, but it definitely had the, you know, more or less church feel to it, to a high school auditorium. That was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
You know, and I was jazzed by that. But on the other hand, I could see people saying after 3 or 4 months, is like, man, we're in a high school auditorium. This is a high school auditorium. This isn't a church. So well, what are the thoughts on where you are with the high school auditorium?
You know, it's, again, it depends on what angle you look at it. It's, mm-hmm. it is, It is either a blessing or a liability. The liability side of it is the fact that the way the auditorium's configured, there is no center aisle, right?
Right.
So it is just 34 chairs straight across. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once you're in the middle, you're there to stay until this is over. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so there isn't the flexibility to get up or do whatever. So it just, it's tight, right? That's the downside. The upside is it's tight. And because of that, I think it creates a certain level of energy and enthusiasm that is different than what we were in before. In fact, I would have to say from kind of a, you know, if you looked at it from the theatrical perspective, far better environment than what we had before, as mm-hmm. far as like acoustics are better.
Yes.
The sense of the focal nature of it is better, that kind of thing. But I think there's another bonus that being in the high school in general really gives us that we didn't have before, and that is it's neutral territory. In other words, you know, if even for me, like recently I did a local church tour also here in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And so on Sunday morning, I'd go to their church and I remember feeling uncomfortable. And I'm a pastor. I do this. Yeah. And I remember I felt a little awkward going into their turf, right? But the high school here particularly is used for all sorts of things, right? It's used for all the theatrical stuff for all the different age brackets, football for all the different age brackets. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people in the city are used to going to the high school. So then when they come on a Sunday morning, some of the I'm a little nervous or uncertain stuff, those issues kind of melt away more because people go, oh, I know where I'm going. I know what it looks like. I know the environment. It's a school the rest of the week. And so I think it takes some of that edge of awkwardness off,
mm-hmm.
and people just are more at ease coming to Redemption than they are if it was our church building. And so, you know, that's one of those areas that we're really still kind of saying thank you,
mm-hmm.
That it has that. I mean, there's still challenges as far as Sunday school. High school is never great for the Sunday school environment,
right.
But it's been great for the adult environment and great for the ease of mind for new people checking it out.
What about weddings and funerals? Because that is a time where most people really like to have the churchy thing going on,
right?
Right? Even people who, you know, don't believe that Jesus was the Son of God or anything, when it comes down to weddings, they want the stained glass and the, you know, pews and almost for a photo op kind of look. And so we've been at this for a year now, and I'm sure there's people who've wanted to get married during mm-hmm. this period of time. I'm sure there's people who have passed away from our congregation, and you know, I don't know. I don't think I would want to be, you know, have my funeral in a high school auditorium.
Right.
You know, I say, well, it's got to be someplace with a steeple, right? Because the steeple points upward, and it kind of gives me which direction to go, not the other way around. So how have you been managing weddings and funerals?
You know, actually, that's been really easy in some ways because it seems there's also been a real shift. And maybe it's a Northwest thing, I don't know. But even where we were at before, very few people actually wanted to get married in the church facility.
Huh.
And there may be some reasons for that. Again, it was more of a multi-purpose design. It didn't have some of the architecture that we're familiar with a traditional church or whatever else. And so, you know, people would just find either a wedding chapel, they would do an outdoor wedding, they would find, there's a place north of here near Monroe that is an old, I mean, it's still a working farm, but they have this huge barn that the upstairs is like a wedding chapel, the downstairs is all for the, you know, reception and everything else. And so, you know, people just kind of sub it out to these other environments that are a little bit more conditioned
mm-hmm.
for weddings. And I think there's this craving nowadays for people to have a creative wedding. You know what I mean? So they don't want to just go with what's been done. So they're always looking for a different venue or something unique. And so really, I think the majority of the weddings I've done here in the last 5 years, I think I did one in a church building.
Wow.
So it just wasn't that common as it was. People like to do it in other venues.
Well, what's the most creative place you've had a wedding at?
The most creative place was actually down on the Columbia River, where after the bride and groom said, I do, they water skied away.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that was pretty cool. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, that one wins right there for me. So,
right. Yeah, I can actually feel that vibe because my wife and I got married in a bed and breakfast in one of our favorite towns in California. So, I can kind of see how that is. But what about funerals? I mean, that's a different story, right?
Right.
Weddings, you celebrate, it's a place that you had some kind of connection to. You love to water ski, that's where you met, or you like horses, and so you get married in the barn. But a funeral, I mean, that's kind of
right.
The end time, and people want a more solemn building respectful kind of things. So how do we manage right. that as a church?
You know, really, in the last year, we haven't had anyone pass away to, like, face that on the ground, right? So
right.
it hasn't been a reality. But, you know, really, a couple of different things that are really happening for people nowadays. You know, one is they go with the funeral home, right? So
right.
they go, okay, we're going to use that. That's a little bit more spendy for some families. Mm-hmm. So what those families tend to do is say, hey, you know what? We're just going to have a memorial at our house in the backyard, a couple of words shared, low key, that kind of thing. And kind of that way it makes it cost effective. It's a little bit more comfortable for mm-hmm. the family and friends. And it kind of just works that way. So, like I said, we haven't faced it yet, but I think if and when we do, right, mm-hmm. It'll be more of those types of ways that it's settled. Or the third option is we have a great relationship with every church in town, you know, mm-hmm. and some of the churches in town definitely have buildings that our churches, man, they're yeah. they're pews and everything. So we certainly could contact them, and they'd be more than happy to let us, you know, kind of crash their space for an afternoon for somebody's mm-hmm. memorial.
Now, one of the things we mentioned at in our first interview together, as you bring up other churches, is there was a rally around the church type of thing.
Right.
And, you know, I've done a lot of research on how churches compete with one another, and that word competition is oftentimes viewed in a negative light, as that I win, you lose. But when I have looked at this on a broader perspective, I see, yeah, churches compete, but they do so in a very we all kind of win type of atmosphere. And so I really sensed that the first week that we put together a church, and has that lasted? I mean, is there that ecumenical, yeah, we're cheering for redemption guys kind of feeling that has lasted for the year?
Yeah, no, they've all been great, you know, and it's not like we get a chance to run together a lot, you know, but we probably, you know, every 6 months we try to get together, you know, and the last meeting we had, which was, I think, just before we hit summer, we all met at the Hub, all the pastors in town did, mm-hmm. So they could kind of see the digs, and we can hang out together and see what God's doing and that kind of thing. We partner with some pastors in the valley, mm-hmm. even some of the smaller churches that could use encouragement on something or some help or just pat on the back, you know. Mm-hmm. So at this point, it's been great. We've just had a great relationship with all the different guys and different people in those churches too. You know, it's funny, we'll see at Redemption people from other churches in town stop in on a Sunday just to say, hey, just want to say you guys yeah. are doing awesome and love you, and we're excited about what you're up to. So yeah, it's totally stayed. It's been great.
That's kind of cool. I want to talk about that, because you did go on this church tour, but before we do that, I have two things about the building that I still have to ask, and I guess it's related to the actual auditorium. The first, and we mentioned how the seats are set up. Everybody has to go in, and you're kind of stuck if you're in the middle, which is interesting. It creates this interesting dynamic that when everybody comes in at first, they want to sit on the ends.
Right.
And so there's a slide. It's a pretty standard slide now. It says, everybody, please move into the middle.
Yeah,
and everyone's like, move into the middle. So, okay.
It's my most consistent announcement every week, too.
Every week. And nobody picks up on that, right? So move to the middle. But there's the interesting dynamic, and I've thought about this in terms of how communion is served, is that instead of walking up to the front and, you know, the pastor handing you the bread and the wine or going to a certain area, we pass it throughout the auditorium hall. So
right.
we have a tray that has the bread in the middle and the wine or grape juice on the outside in these little cups, and it's a pretty big one. And my question here, because this worries me every Sunday I'm here, has anybody ever spilled that tray?
We have not had anybody spill that tray.
That's
yeah.
a miracle.
Yes, I know. This is where, you know, it's like, you know, there's like two hands and a third one that's just divinely orchestrated underneath that. Because, yeah, I've waited for that day for sure. Just because, you know, you have little kids and uh-huh. you have the elderly and everything in between. And, you know, the seats are tight, and turning to the person next to you
yeah.
is an epic feat in and of itself, because they're so tight, and so far nothing. Yeah.
Okay.
Because you'll know if it ever goes down, you're going to know, man.
Because
that floor is concrete, it's slope, you're just going to hear gung, gung, and it's going to roll. So everybody's just going to gasp, and then they'll giggle. That's
yeah,
what will happen.
Except
for the recovering Catholics. They will just be horrified.
Oh, that is true, yes. That could be the case. I'm waiting for that moment. I'm figuring one of my family is going to be one of the ones that does that. So I am. My my blood pressure goes up every time this comes around. I was like, careful, careful. The other thing, and this relates to passing things too, is the collection plate. That when the collection plate comes around, and this is one of the things I really loved about the I guess the early church. It sounds like I'm talking in the first few decades, but a year ago, when after a week you had to put something together, and like a Thursday or Friday, you go, oh my gosh, what's collection plates? Well, quick, let's go to the hardware store and get popcorn buckets. Right. And so we had popcorn buckets. I love that. When those things came around, I was like, oh, we're putting these in popcorn buckets. It kind of reminds us of the humble beginnings of this church, right? That you're kind of exiled and you're thrown out and we got to just scratch things together. And so we're using popcorn buckets. And I wanted that to be a permanent fixture of church. Now, I noticed after a couple months, though, we went to this, there's these very fancy
sissy leather box.
Yes. it looks totally mega church now. So what gives with
you
that?
You know what? You and I are going to start a club.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to start we're bitter that we don't still have the popcorn buckets club, because I'm with you. Matter of fact, if there's anything I'm not, it's a control freak. And so there's some parts of how redemption works that just aren't my wheelhouse to work in.
Yeah.
So Ryan Habig kind of handles all of the Sunday morning mechanics, right?
Right.
So he comes to me and he's like, hey, I'm getting rid of the popcorn buckets. and I know. And I actually put up a stink, man. I'm like, these things are awesome.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're falling apart. They're ratty. And I'm like, that's what makes them awesome.
It reminds you where he came from.
And
right?
Ultimately, he has trumping power over what goes on in the mechanics of Sunday morning. And so eventually, they stuck around for a little while longer after I pitched my fit. But eventually, at one point, I noticed they went to leather boxes, and I was heartbroken. I'm still heartbroken.
Okay.
I mean, if they came back, I would celebrate. I am with you, man. Maybe we could start a Facebook campaign of some kind.
We could, or maybe somebody will just bring one in and
just
put
start
it in
passing
the bucket. Because I do. It was offbeat. It was quirky, but it was us, and so I really kind of like that.
So I'm with you, man.
Okay, so let me, talk about this what you've been doing. You talked about how we've connected with other churches. Some people kind of plug into our churches, and we've offered our space up to others to meet and that kind of thing. One of the things that you did just a few months ago, as things have started to settle down, and this was up on your Facebook page, was you did this church tour,
right?
It seems like, and I wasn't following it close enough to really understand what was going on here, but for I was about 2 weeks.
No, it was a power trip.
It was a power trip.
I mean, it was like only just a couple of days.
A couple of days.
But we pounded out, like long, detailed meetings with different church staffs.
Okay.
In that process.
And so what was this? Where did you go? What was the idea behind it? What happened?
Right. So what we did is we actually went about 4.5 hours away. So we went over to Spokane, which is the east side of Washington State, and we set up meetings with 5 different, very diverse churches. Not diverse as far as they were all evangelical, right? So we weren't trying to, get outside of that umbrella. So we wanted evangelical churches, but we went to the largest church in Spokane. We went to one of the newest church plants in Spokane. We went to a church that had gone through a pretty rough split 20 years ago and had a lot of hardships during the course of that time. Mm-hmm. Went to a church that I was connected to at one time over there, and then went to another church that had just built a big building and was sinking under the weight of the cost of it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that was really to go, okay, let's see what each of those churches are facing. Let's see things that they've done that they love, things that they've done that they hate, mistakes that they've made, victories that they can cheer about, and just get their tone and disposition. So the reason we decided to go all the way over there as opposed to do that in Seattle is, frankly, the farther you go, the more honest the church will be. Because
you don't want
you
your
don't have
gossiping.
The competition, right? I mean, we go back to that topic. Again, when you're in a given community, you'll be transparent if you're run down, where you're just tired, so it's fellow pastors that you can just vent to, like that happens. But for the most part, you kind of keep chin up and poker face and everything else. And whether that's good or bad, I'm just saying it's true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Human
so
nature.
Yeah. So, we're like, man, if we go to the other side of the state, hey man, there's not gonna be any overlap. They're just gonna be pretty transparent, which is exactly what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to, find out just a lot of great stuff that they had done, which was cool, because then again, we could compare it to Redemption and go, wow, things for a first year kind of born out of chaos, things are really good, and as pastors, we were relieved because a lot of guys are you know, a little discouraged or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And we're really blessed, right? Yeah, yeah. So it was just all the way around really, really positive to hear from those different environments. And also to you know, even see how they would address some of their, whether it be difficult people or difficult conditions. And they those even would be really diverse, you know, how from church to church, how they would handle problems. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we loved our opportunity just to pick their brain.
What were some of the big takeaways from that? If you had to list the three big lessons from that church tour, what were they? And oh, by the way, did you make tour shirts? Kind of like, you know.
That would have been rocking. Like, we should have done that. We weren't that cool, apparently. Okay. You know, should have had Thompson on that. But, no, I think, you know, some of the real big walkaways is vision either causes a church to thrive or to suffer. Maybe I should say the lack of vision causes it to suffer, okay, and a right. clear sense of vision causes it to thrive. And we could see that difference really, really astutely. Mm-hmm. The leaders that could rattle off their vision from just rote memory, mm-hmm. Those churches were healthy. The ones that kind of meandered when we said, "So what are you guys about?" And they're like, "Well, we're this and that, and we do a lot of stuff."
Yeah.
You know, it was just like it was the difference between, you know, 30-06 and just a shotgun. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's just the visionless guys just had pellets everywhere, but no real distance. Mm-hmm. And that we don't say that as a criticism, but it was just as an outside observer, you could see it. And the churches that struggled with vision were struggling with a lot of other things too. Mm-hmm. Versus the churches that had a real clear sense of vision, even on things that I would go like, "Wow, you guys are really loose on that," it still worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just worked because there was so much velocity rooted in the vision. So I think that was one real big thing. I think the other thing is we were able to ask, if you build it, did they come? Mm-hmm. And unilaterally, the answer is no.
Yeah,
right? So, and everybody gets sucked into this, right? You know, especially this is good for us, you know, as we have to look at the future. The one church that said, "We built it and they came," the real story was they had been coming for 15 years mm-hmm. and we kept planting churches and we kept just doing more services and we saved up the money.
Yeah.
And then we built it. And then once we built it, they just kept coming like they had for 15 years. So they were the church with the clearest sense of vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them, it wasn't like, "Hey, wouldn't it be cool to build it so we can get more people?" It's like, "We have so many people. We just don't have a choice. We're finally at that point where we either just keep planting, because we're growing by 500 a year, you know, kind mm-hmm. of thing." So that was another real big lesson learned. And the third is just a staff team that really enjoys each other thrives, and a staff team that just has departments, they struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was another great reminder, you know, for us. I mean, we're a pretty tight staff. We really mm-hmm. dig each other. But for churches that are more departmentalized and compartmentalized at that level,
yeah.
it feeds sometimes the lack of vision. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, we can see how that could happen. And you guys are a very tight group. Your staff is very tight. I think in part you've forged by fire that one week of, you know, "We got to do this. We don't have an option." Really brought everybody together strong, and you know, you learned your strengths and weaknesses of one another and work with those strong. Was the tour that you took too kind of a reinvigorating tour? Did you come back from this saying, "Yeah, we're all jazzed about it"? And do you plan to do it again in the future?
Yeah, we'll definitely do them in the future. We might even do something where every 2 years we revisit the same cruise that we did to go, okay, what's happened the last 2 years? You know, so we built relationships with each of those, you know, teams that we visited. Mm-hmm. And it just gives you a benchmark, right?
Yeah.
So you can kind of see how they develop and evolve as a church. So I think we'll do that. And I know for me, I mean, I can't speak for all of us. I think, you know, every time we'd be done with a meeting, we'd sort of unpack what we learned in the meeting. And I think that part was good because, again, there's things we could glean. Mm-hmm. Either we could go, "Hey, we're on the right track," or, "Hey, we should think about this more," or, "Here's something we should fine tune." So there was a lot of learning, even how it applied to redemption. But I think it was also invigorating because it got us as pastors outside of our environment for a couple of days. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? For just us to run together a little bit. And that was really nice, too. So that had another real positive note to it.
So let me make this a little bit more broad, and not just that church tour that you took, but in the past year, what have you learned? Have there been mistakes that you've made and you've made corrections, of course? Are there things, surprises you never anticipated and you had to react to? Give us your broad thoughts on the past year.
Yeah, no, and I don't know if I really have probably a real crisp answer for that question. I mean, I think one of the things that we sort of knew but we didn't know until we were doing it is, budget. Which is going to sound funny, but when you don't have anything to measure against, you set up this budget when you first start, and you assume, well, we're going to need X for this and X for this and X for this, and then you get in it and you realize, wow, that was way undershot. Or there was things where we said, man, to really get more on track with our priorities, we're going to move these pastors around, and we're going to bring these guys in as residents or interns to fill in this gap, and that's going to be a cost that was unanticipated and that kind of thing. So I think, because we're all kind of not controlling when it comes to budget, but we try to be really, really conservative on budget. So as soon as you see that your budget's getting scrambled because you just didn't, you had no way to know for sure how this was all going to play throughout the year. That was something that I don't think it was a mistake, but it was something that we just had to adjust to mentally and go, wait, it's okay. What I mean? I know we're moving stuff around here just because we thought operations was going to be this and it's this, and we thought the school was going to cost this much, but it cost this much, and we didn't know we were going to need that many classrooms, which is more cost to the school. Mm-hmm. And so I think that part of it, going into next year, I think we just finalized the budget for next year this week, and we had a lot more clarity, mm-hmm. So I think that gave us a lot more peace, and I think we have a better sense of who we are. So budget should follow the priorities of what you most care about. Now we know more what we most care about, so we're developing it that way.
Yeah, and for me, that's an absolutely fascinating aspect of all this, because most people, when you think of churches, you don't think of budgets. It's just, that's outside. That's something a business does, right? But right. It's how you allocate your resources and how you prioritize things, and you can't do everything that you want, so you got to make some trade-offs and shift things around a little bit. So for me, that's an absolutely fascinating aspect. And the other thing is, they never teach you that probably in seminary.
No,
right?
There is no class.
Yeah, there should be.
There's a few classes they should have, and that's certainly one of them. Because I think what happens so often in churches is both they have kind of ministry or mission sprawl. Mm-hmm. Whatever the good idea of the week is, well, that's flavor of the week then, and that's what we're going to go do. So you start losing a sense of priority just to do a bunch of good things instead of focusing on maybe five really great things.
Yeah.
So we're pretty dogged about that. So we're like, no, budget follows priority, and we know our priorities. Mm-hmm. But I think as Redemption moved on, there was just things, again, we didn't know. Mm-hmm. We didn't know items or things we may or may not need. And then it was great. I mean, this is like the coolest part. We talk about the God thing sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome because one of the things we knew we needed to do as a church is get a new soundboard. Mm-hmm. We've been using the one at the school. The problem is it's just old enough. Well, we've been using one at school, and then we had somebody donate one to us. But they're both just old enough that they hate when any modern cell phones are around it.
Yeah.
So it gets all the feedback and all these problems, and it's just tough in the modern era to do anything with it. So we're like, man, we're gonna have to throw down a chunk of change for a new soundboard, and this is gonna be a hassle. Well, literally this week we found out that the school is going to be using a new soundboard. They're bringing a new soundboard into the mm-hmm. school, which was originally the soundboard that was at the facility we used to be in.
And the irony of all ironies.
Yeah, and the only people that know how to run that soundboard are people that are at Redemption Church.
Wow, yeah,
So suddenly it's like, what a blessing. We don't have to buy this.
Uh-huh.
Some of our people are collaborating with the school district to help them on all of their sound stuff, and so Jesus just saved us like 10 grand, And so that was one of the things we scheduled to get it. Now we don't need to get it. And so, oh, cool, now we can do something different.
Yeah,
so it's really cool that way.
Well, I would have said the easy problem to that was to forbid everybody from bringing their cell phones into
that
services.
That would have been a blessing.
But everybody has their Bible on their Windows phone
that's
or
huge.
iPhone.
Yeah. Nowadays, we, sometimes they'll say open your Bibles or your apps.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
So many people are running apps now,
And now, Steve, when you're up there, too, and I'm looking at my phone, you can say, oh, he's a devoted Christian looking at Corinthians.
Come on,
or something.
You're checking the Hawks, man.
I can't get away. No, my wife wouldn't let me. She's got the sharp elbows and wouldn't let me get away with that. One thing I want to do before we leave off here, I just want to ask you a few fun questions that as I've gathered a few podcasts over the years here, there's been a couple questions that have always come up, and we ask these of scholars, or we talk about these as scholars, but it's really kind of nice talking to a practitioner in a field just to get your take on these things. And some of these questions have always kind of rattled around in my head. And so I got three of them for you based upon podcasts
we've done. It's like the lightning round or something?
It's the lightning round, yeah. So you got, you know, like, I'll give you 2 minutes to answer each one.
Nice, nice.
One of them, it deals with the election that's coming up now. There's been a movement afoot, especially in evangelical circles, to preach politics from the pulpit. And I don't know if it's necessarily an aggressive way to preach politics, but they want the ability to say what they want from the pulpit. And it's a means of challenging the Internal Revenue Service's rule that 501c3 entities, which churches fall under, cannot engage in partisan politics. And we featured two shows a couple years ago based on this with Eric Stanley of the Alliance Defense Fund and Pastor Joe Featon from Cedar Park Church. And both of them have been pretty adamant that says, you know, if a pastor wants to say something on the pulpit, that pastor can say whatever they want on the pulpit. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm going to split the difference a little bit, because I think there's different parts to the issue. And I think for a church that says, you know what, we want the freedom to say whatever we want about politics, I think it's really simple. Drop your 501 status.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can do that. Yep. I mean, this idea that says a church has to have a 501 to be a church is silly. Drop it. Mm-hmm. If it's so important to you, that's where I think sometimes this is a little bit of I want my cake and eat it too, where it's like, I want the flexibility to say something pro or anti-government, but I also want the government to cut me a break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, pick a side, man. Either pick the side that says, all right, I'm gonna remain neutral on... Now, I think if it's... There's a difference between moral issues and political issues, right? So I get if they say, we want to be able to address moral issues that may have some barb politically to them.
Mm-hmm.
I get that problem more. But I think the ones that say, we want to be able to go up there and say, here's why you should vote for Romney, or here's why you should vote for Obama, or here's why you shouldn't vote for, you know, that stuff, I'm like... I don't even know if that really should play a role from the pulpit anyway, to be honest. I don't know if Jesus cares so much about those issues. I think he cares about underpinning issues, but I don't think he cares about some of that applicational stuff. And so, you know, my thing is pick your side. You know, you can't get it both ways or have it both ways.
Okay.
I don't know if I have like a hyper strong conviction on that, partly because I don't have a hyper strong conviction to want to push one side or the other. I like to joke about both sides. I think it's good to always think about, well, why do you land on one side or the other? But I think some guys are really wanting to preach politics more than they're wanting to preach what the Bible says about things that pertain to politics. I mean, even this next Theology on Tap, it's all about who would Jesus vote for, right? You know, would he vote for the alleged Muslim or the Mormon? You know what I mean?
Right, right.
That's
going to
be hilarious.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That'll be an interesting one. Mix that with a little bit of alcohol and
it'll be
doggy,
awesome.
Yeah. All right, so next question. And this takes us a completely different direction, but this is one that's absolutely fascinated with me. And I am asking this almost of every person I come across now. Is it deals with the U.S. War of Independence. Here's my question for you. Would you, as a Christian in 1775, have picked up arms to fight with the Continental Army or a colonial militia against King George after the first shots at Lexington and Concord were fired?
Okay, so like everything I like to do, which is I'll take it two directions quickly, a minute for each direction. You know, I think when the question's asked, I've answered this in Q&As and stuff like that, and I think it's really easy for us as pastors or scholars or whatever to answer this very academically. And the academic answer is going to be no, right? That's kind of, because you go, well, you know, Jesus says, hey, man, pay your taxes, shut up, do the right thing, honor the king.
Cite the Romans 13 passage.
Yeah, Romans 13, you got, what is it, 1 Peter chapter 2, you've got Jesus' thing on pay your taxes and all of that, right? So I think kind of, you know, from this very, you know, paper-perfect perspective, the answer is, why would you? But then it's people messy, right?
Yeah,
so there's paper-perfect, people messy. And if you're asking me what I would have done, I probably would have picked up a gun and started shooting people. So, you know what I mean?
Well,
and,
yeah.
Because I go, in the moment, you're looking at your family, you're looking at your neighbors, you're looking at all of that. And I go, I don't think it's, we're being kind of sanctimonious if we think it's so clean that we wouldn't. You know what I mean? This question gets posed to me in different forms, like, well, if somebody was trying to intrude into your home, mm-hmm. would you shoot them? Or would Jesus say, no, you just bow and pray and hope the guy goes away and mm-hmm. that kind of thing? And I go, man, in a perfect world, yeah, here's these biblical answers. Mm-hmm. We live in a messy world, and it's never as clean as just me being so heady. Here's what I would do. I think we get sucked into grabbing a musket or whatever we had.
And the congregation just recently took a trip down to Yakima for a shootout.
So I know. That's right. And Scott's whole message there was basically Jesus was packing. I got it.
I supposedly we're going to do this again in June or something. I'm going to make sure I clear my weekend for that one. I guess the last question I have for you, and this was related to the podcast that we had last week with Ron Mock, relates to that question. Pacifism. Mm-hmm. Does it work?
That goes two directions also. I mean, again, that's my problem. I'm always kind of like this moderate on some of these things because I go, well, clearly Gandhi showed that it works. And I think clearly Jesus showed that it works. The reality is it's also heavily trampled and abused also. You know, you can have a pacifist and a terrorist just puts a bullet right through him. He doesn't care, you know? Yeah. So, the question is really at what level does it work? Does it send its message? It does. Does it mean the pacifist wins? Usually not. Yeah. And so it depends on how pragmatic or how principled you're being in the conversation about pacifism. Mm-hmm. I think if somebody said, well, pacifism's going to change the world, well, no, it's not. We're in a sinful, broken world. Only Jesus coming back is going to fix this place. So I don't think pacifism's going to save the world. At the same time, I think pacifism does send a powerful message when it's truly throttled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So again, Gandhi having a movement where people are just getting beat up by British troops, it really did send a powerful message, right? But again, everybody runs to Gandhi as the example because it's one of the few that you can run to. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of pacifist movements. Most of them do not send a powerful message, in part because the pacifists deteriorate into name-calling and everything else too, right? I mean, you look at some of the peace, quote, movements right now in our own country. Well, those people have venom tongues too,
I guess the underlying thing about the pacifism too, and we talked again with this with Ron Mock last time in a very, very interesting podcast, we'll link up to it, is the whole love thy enemy aspect, right? Is that, maybe there are times that I have to defend myself. I have to strike back. I have to take action. But, there's that aspect of loving your enemy too. And that, for a lot of people, that's a very difficult circle to square because, it's the same thing. You can hate the sin, but love the sinner. And a lot of people outside the Christian church have a hard time what do you mean by that?
Right.
Because there is, a very deep philosophical underpinning to all that is difficult to really reconcile your brain around.
So, I think so. And it's because, we get into these, circumstances that kind of make it messy again. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about even for this next Theology on Tap, one of the points I'm going to make is when Jesus is interacting with Pilate and he says, it's right there, he's been beaten, crucifixion is just hours away, and he says, hey, my kingdom's not of this world. If it was, my followers would fight. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus instantly does this demarcation that says, my kingdom is not like anything this planet would ever do. We don't fight. So that's where I go. Jesus's statement and his commands on loving enemies, very, very clear. Mm-hmm. And I think we should aspire to that clear statement. We really should. And my concern sometimes is that we're too quick to excuse that.
Yeah.
Particularly as evangelicals, patriotic, America's number one evangelicals. I mean, hey, I'm all there with everybody else on that. But I think it sometimes muddies, or we almost want to start to excuse what he said a little bit, or doctor it up so it doesn't sound so brazen as really love your enemies, do good to them, pray for them.
Mm-hmm.
Jump for joy when you're persecuted is what he says in Luke chapter 6.
Yeah.
We're like, ooh, well, how do we subvert that somehow and soften it? And, I think it's better to leave the tension saying, yeah, this is what we should aspire to. And, the early church, they embraced it, and the church expanded because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think keeping that healthy tension is a lot better option than just, again, saying, you know, excusing it or creating hypotheticals. So what, because anytime this comes up with people, they'll ask me, so what would you do if somebody was attacking your wife? You know what I mean?
With a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, okay. You know, I'm like, yeah, I got you. I probably would go against what Jesus said. Yeah. It's probably what I would do. Yeah. But I don't want to undermine what he said.
Right.
You know, and that's the problem, you know.
All right, one last question, final reflection here, and this is, again, one of these common questions I always ask my guests to finish off with. Now, you've had a year now to engage in the whole build a church in a week thing.
Right.
And that was a very hectic time, so that was an interesting interview. You had a certain context there. You had a certain context after we came back together and talked after a couple months. Now, earlier in this podcast, I used the term Schumpeterian churning of the American religious landscape.
And best term ever.
I love that term. I'm going to trademark that term.
I'm telling you, man, that's going to make you rich. That's going to make you rich.
Yeah, no, when we were talking about how the church was changing, our congregation was changing about a year ago, I used that, and you really liked it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for folks not quite understanding what I mean here, it goes back to Schumpeter, who wrote about capitalism and how capitalist economy is constantly creating winners and losers, and people fail and then they succeed, and that creates a really kind of creative dynamic within the economy. Well, it's the same thing here in our religious landscape. Old congregations, they crumble and they disappear, and then new ones rise and they grow, and we've been part of that process, which is really interesting. But on the other hand, it's very disorienting and scary for a lot of people who look at churches in decline, and they see the, you know, perhaps they read the downfall of Western civilization here. So, you know, you've been on this falling apart and rising again side. So, you know, you've had a chance to reflect upon this.
Mm-hmm.
What does your experience over the past year have to say about Christianity in general? Where do you think we're heading? Is it an optimistic future? Is it a pessimistic future? Where are we at?
You know, I'm actually really optimistic, and I just was ranting about this just a couple of Sundays ago, and to, I think, a number of hearty amens from people behind that, because I think there is this thing where if you listen to the media all the time, uh-huh, everything's falling apart. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they are the doomsday machine on pretty much every topic. Yeah. And so if that's what
kittens are turning on their masks.
I know, exactly. Yeah, okay. You know, so it's just bedlam, right? And so, you know, I'm much more optimistic. I think part of, like, at least in Christianity in the United States, partly why people kind of go, oh, it's getting worse or whatever, is because they look back to the 50s and they go, everybody went to church. And I go, yeah, but not everybody gave a rip necessarily.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, the fact that churches were full on Sunday doesn't mean that people were really committed followers of Christ. It just means that's what you did in that culture.
Yeah.
So I think what we have now is probably a whole lot less people going to church, but the ones that go are a whole lot more serious.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a refinement that goes on in that that's really, really healthy and really good. So I don't have the same negativity. I think, you know, Jesus, certainly his message was, we're getting ready to do this series called Not a Fan, mm-hmm, as a church for our regroups. And, you know, the whole point was Jesus didn't want fans. He wanted followers,
mm-hmm,
you know. And in fact, when crowds were there and they're like, you know, this guy makes food out of nothing. This is awesome. You know, he didn't go like, sweet, I got this giant following. Yeah. He turns around and says like, hey, man, unless you really follow me,
commit.
You can't be my disciple. And they all walk away.
Yeah.
He had no problem chasing off crowds because he wanted followers, not just fans. And so I think that's more of what we have nowadays is people go, I'm taking this more seriously, which is why when people talk about the decline in denominations and things like that, part of that is because the non-denominational churches, to be blunt, start to have more expectation and demand, not in the liturgy side, but kind of the day in, day out, mm-hmm, regular affairs of life stuff, which is why it's the non-denominational churches that have higher giving than the main lines, mm-hmm, and all of that, because people go, man, there's more expected of me. And so that's a broad statement. I don't want to, you know, paint every denomination with a broad stroke like that.
No, that's
but
true,
generically
but, yeah,
speaking, I think that's really what's true. And so they're in decline. The non-denominations are non-denominational churches are on the incline, and they're increasingly saying we want to raise the bar on standard. Mm-hmm. Even churches that were like very seeker-oriented, Willow Creek church, you know, that kind of really started that whole outreach, seeker-sensitive movement. In the last 5 years, they've gone, oh, man, we didn't teach great biblical literacy. We need to raise the bar. Yeah. The largest church we went to in Spokane, that was their message. Their message was, we packed up with a lot of people, but they didn't realize that some of their lifestyle was broken, and we weren't teaching them. We screwed up. So we're teaching more biblical literacy, raising the bar, and causing people to go, wow, Jesus wants more of me. Yeah. So all over the place, there's a shift that says more serious about our faith.
Well, that is a good, optimistic note to end on there, and I'm sure that we will be talking in more in the future, and you should be seeing more of me in the next couple months.
Excellent. See, so, which is very good. So, it's that cowboy hat, man. If I don't see it on Sunday, I feel lost.
All right. Very good. You will see in the next coming weeks there will be a cowboy hat there.
Fantastic.
Even if I have to send somebody else with it on. Anyway, so Matt, once again, thank you for being on Research on Religion.
Hey, thanks, my friend.
Thank you for listening to Research on Religion. To learn more about today's topic, participate in a discussion about what you've heard, or browse other podcasts, please visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org. And if you like what we're doing, please tell a friend. We'd appreciate the company. See you next week.